Good evening, everyone. I'm Lina Hudu. Welcome to Health Chat. I'm glad you can join us today. On the program, we will have a roundup of some health news stories today. We start first in Zimbabwe, where the country is struggling with soaring inflation and includes significantly higher prices at public health care facilities. The reporter Kudzai Vinashe has more from Harare.
Dr. Norman Matara is with the Zimbabwe Association for Doctors for Human Rights. He says there was some justification for the new prices.
There are two issues here involved. The price increases, they were long overdue. That is the first thing. The money that was being charged, they were a little bit low compared to the prices of acquiring some of the goods and services to use.
The increases vary based on the service, but on average, they are over 500%. Matara does have some reservations.
At the same time, we have to look at it with the people's earnings now, because when we talk about the right to health, we are talking about the issue of accessibility and availability. The issue of accessibility now also includes affordability. In as much as the prices are justified, but people will not be able to afford them when you look at how much people are earning.
Matara fears the result will be fewer people can access healthcare. Dr. Agnes Mahomva is the permanent secretary in the Ministry of Health. She told the state broadcaster the government will continue its policy of providing free care for the vulnerable.
I want to assure the public out there that as a Minister of Health and Town Care, we have not abandoned our policies. Specifically, we intend to make sure that the under fives remain free. We are not charging them. We are also taking care of the pregnant women. We also look at the elderly, 65 and above. So quite clearly our policy has not changed. We continue looking out for the underprivileged, as I have just outlined.
Mahomba also says public institutions will not turn away anyone who does not fall in those categories but cannot afford medical fees. The price increases come after some junior doctors returned to work after a long standoff with the government because of low salaries. Matara, however, says while the higher fee hikes probably will not translate to better pay for doctors, but they may translate to better equipment and supplies in hospitals. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinavashe from Harare.
Now to East Africa, the World Health Organization says the region has the highest rate of cervical cancer in the world. In October, Kenya launched a mass vaccination of girls against the human papilloma virus, HPV, which can lead to cervical cancer. The vaccine is being welcomed by HPV patients. WHO hopes their children will be protected better than they were. Rael Ombor reports from Nairobi.
30-year-old Jacinta Agunja tested positive in 2016 for one of the human papilloma viruses that lead to cervical cancer. After 2 years of intensive and expensive treatment, she was free of HPV and did not get cancer. Agunja hopes Kenya's mass vaccination of girls, launched in October, will prevent her 10-year-old daughter from also getting the virus.
That vaccine, I just need it to help my daughter and other women who are not sexually active for now. When they come to be sexually active, they'll be already protected, so they cannot go through what I went through. Because most of women in informal settlement, they cannot afford that much.
Kenya is offering the free HPV vaccine as part of the country's routine immunization schedule to 10-year-old girls. Doctors say the vaccine program is a major milestone in the fight against cervical cancer in East Africa, which has the highest rate in the world. Dr. Catherine Nyongesa is the director of the Texas Cancer Center, a private hospital started in 2010 to offer specialized cancer treatment.
Parents are encouraged to take their children for immunization, but all the same, a vaccination doesn't give one guarantee that you may not get the cancer, but studies in developed countries have shown that actually the rate of cervical cancer goes down with planned proper immunization.
At least 7 women die every day in Kenya from cervical cancer, according to the Ministry of Health. The ministry says the HPV vaccine could cut the rate of cervical cancer by up to 70%. Cecily Karioki is Kenya's Cabinet Secretary for Health.
We have managed to distributed the vaccines in all the 47 counties, in all the public facilities. We have covered upwards of 300,000 girls to date. The target continues because our target is 800,000 girls.
At least 115 countries have made the HPV vaccine routine, including some in East Africa. Rwanda first introduced the vaccine in 2006, followed by Uganda in 2015 and Tanzania in 2018. While Kenya normally leads development in the region, its efforts in preventing cervical cancer are seen by many, including Agunja, as better late than never. Raya Lombor for VOA News, Nairobi.
Now, the WHO reports investigations into potential health threats and the quick response by the international health body and partners to global emergencies has protected millions of the world's most vulnerable people this year from disease and death. That's most recently 2019, that is. For VOA, Lisa Schlein has more from Geneva.
Text in 3, 2, 1. In 2019, the World Health Organization and partners have responded to 51 emergencies in more than 40 countries and territories and have investigated 440 potential health threats in 138 countries and territories. After the headlines evoking these emergencies have faded away, the work of helping the victims of man-made and natural disasters recover carries on out of the media spotlight. Executive Director of WHO Emergencies Program, Michael Ryan, says the unseen work of sustaining fragile health systems in conflicts and other emergencies does not stop.
In Bangladesh, we work with partners to address the health needs of nearly 1 million Rohingya refugees living in the crowded camps in Cox's Bazar. The mortality rate in this highly vulnerable population has remained at low levels. These crude death rates remain well below what is considered acceptable in this situation. And that's down to a lot of hard work by a lot of people.
Ryan says WHO and partners have provided health services to more than 10 million people in Yemen. He says over 1 million children have been protected from vaccine-preventable diseases and more than 100,000 have been treated for severe acute malnutrition.
In Uganda, Ebola transmission was prevented after cases crossed from DRC on two separate occasions, and the preparedness work that's been going on in surrounding countries. Uganda, with the support of the international community, spent $18 million on preparedness and stopped Ebola twice.
The World Health Organization estimates more than $1 billion will be spent to root out the deadly Ebola virus, which has been circulating in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo since August 2018. The latest number of reported cases stands at 3,366, including 2,227 deaths. Other emergencies to which WHO has responded over the past year include the cyclone in Mozambique, conflict emergencies in Syria and South Sudan, floods in Iran, an earthquake in Albania, and a deadly measles outbreak on the small Pacific island of Samoa. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
It's time for a short break. We'll be right back.
VOA's Our Voices television program is about more than just sitting and talking about women's issues. It's about listening to them and bringing their opinions to the table and making sure that their voices are heard. Because our lived experiences, our stories, and our voices will help shape the next generation.
Check your local TV listings and join the conversation each week with Our Voices on VOA.
What's going on, Africa? This is Jackson Vunganyi coming to you from the Voice of America studios here in Washington, D.C. Join us each week on Upfront as we discuss a range of topics. The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
Eliminate the mentality that girls cannot do what boys can do.
You basically need to go to school. There's just no way you're going to get all the skills that people want from you or they expect from you if you're not at school.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Asante, AU, African Union. Can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
Welcome back to the show. For those of you joining us tonight, we take a look at some health news highlight. Now we turn to pollution, and pollution kills more than 8 million people around the world in 2017, more than three times the global toll from AIDS, tuberculosis, and malaria combined. And that's according to the latest estimates from the Global Alliance on Health and Pollution. VOA's Steve Barragona has more.
Dirty air and water, lead poisoning, and polluted workplaces killed an estimated 8.3 million people in 2017. That's more than smoking. It's more than alcohol and drug abuse. It beats unhealthy diets, major infectious diseases, and war. But it gets less attention than any of those in much of the world. That's according to a new report by the Global Alliance on Health and Pollution, which includes researchers, national health ministries, NGOs, and the United Nations. Rachel Kupka is executive director.
And it's pointing out that a global health crisis is in fact still undercounted, still underaddressed, still under-resourced.
The report says pollution from traditional sources, like smoky cook stoves and poor sanitation, are declining, while modern pollution from factories, vehicles, and toxic chemicals are on the rise. Kupka notes that international investment has focused on traditional pollution.
Water and sanitation, like I mentioned, has had a lot of investment in it, so the deaths are coming down, whereas the other issues in terms of modern pollution have not received the same or equivalent amount of resources and attention.
India and China had the most pollution-related deaths, followed by Nigeria, Indonesia, and Pakistan. The United States was seventh.
There's countries from almost every region of the world present in that top 10 list. So we really are all impacted. It doesn't matter kind of where you are.
Air pollution was the leading killer, making up 40% of the global death toll. Kupka says the good news is that measures already exist that can help reduce the impacts.
There are cost-effective things that countries can do, that communities can do, that cities can do, to implement and bring down their burden of disease from pollution.
Authorities can adopt and enforce emissions controls for vehicles and smokestacks, require personal protective gear for workers, and other measures already in place in many countries. Steve Barragona, VOA News.
Now, 2019 saw a disease that's totally preventable claim the lives of more than 140,000 people, mostly children and babies, all because they missed getting two doses of the measles vaccine. VOA's Carol Pearson reports that unvaccinated children created a pathway for measles outbreaks globally.
Samoan parents never expected to face such grief.
I was shocked. It was very hard for me to accept what happened.
It's very hard to lose a child. She's gone, and I never forget her. The way I try to teach her how to talk.
Measles claimed the lives of more than 80 Samoans, mostly children and infants.
Two shots of a vaccine could have saved those children's lives.
The vaccination rate in Samoa dropped to about 30% after two children died from a measles vaccine that was mixed with a muscle relaxant instead of water. Parents panicked, and anti-vaccination activists convinced them to avoid the vaccine. Then measles exploded on the island.
The hospitals and health clinics were overrun with very sick children, and there weren't enough healthcare workers and hospital beds to adequately deliver the services that they needed.
The Samoan government started a massive vaccination effort. It then turned to the CDC for help.
CDC also was asked to do training of healthcare workers to ensure safe vaccine delivery, as well as to monitor the quality of the immunization campaign that took place.
In 2019, more than 400,000 cases of measles were reported globally, with an additional 250,000 cases in the Democratic Republic of Congo. In the first 3 months of 2019, the number of measles cases tripled over the same period last year.
The main reason for failure to vaccinate against measles is families, communities are not having access to the vaccine.
Two doses of the measles vaccine will protect children from the disease. Yet conflict and poor health systems in low-income countries prevent families from vaccinating their children. In rich countries, vaccinations are declining too. Some parents are opting out of immunizations. The United States tops the list with 2.5 million children missing their first dose of the measles vaccine. In 2019, the CDC reported that more than 1,000 cases of measles in 31 states by late December, the highest number in 25 years.
Then in the United States now, we've got measles outbreaks and epidemics are becoming a new normal in this country after we've eliminated measles in 2000.
The WHO took away the measles eradication status of four European countries because of outbreaks and their low immunization rates.
In other words, we're backsliding.
Samoa concluded its state of emergency just before 2019 ended, but the resurgence of measles remains a global health problem. Unless children get vaccinated, there will be more deaths and more measles outbreaks in 2020. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
Now, the United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, reports that the past decade has been particularly deadly for children. It says attacks against children in situations of conflict have risen threefold since 2010. Take a listen.
As the decade draws to a close, UNICEF reports children continue to pay a deadly price as conflicts rage around the world. In a video message, UNICEF Executive Director Henrietta Fore expresses her dismay at the bloody cost of war that claims so many young lives, forces them to flee their homes, and shatters their dreams for the future.
Today, hundreds of millions of children and young people are living in countries and areas torn apart by conflict, from Syria and Yemen to South Sudan, Central African Republic, and Nigeria.
UNICEF has verified more than 170,000 grave violations against children in conflict since the start of the decade. That comes to more than 45 violations every single day for the last 10 years. It says it fears the killing and maiming of children will increase as conflicts become more frequent, are more violent, and last longer. Ford describes the lives of the children caught in this mayhem as a waking nightmare.
They're used as human shields. They're vulnerable to abuse, exploitation, and child marriage. Many are recruited to the fighting, and millions miss out on the nutrition, health care, protection, and education that their bodies and brains need to develop.
UNICEF reports airstrikes and explosive weapons such as landmines, mortars, and cluster munitions have killed or maimed more than 12,000 children in 2018. In addition, it has verified more than 24,000 grave violations against children, including sexual violence, abductions, child recruitment, and attacks on schools and hospitals. The agency says attacks and violence against children have not let up throughout 2019. The final tally for the year is not yet in, but it has verified more than 10,000 grave violations against children during the first half of the year, noting the actual number is likely to be much higher. As the year and the decade draw to a close, UNICEF is urging all warring parties to abide by their obligations under international law and to end violations against children. It also is calling on states with influence over the parties to do more to protect children against the ravages of war. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Now to Yemen. Haunted by the ongoing war in the country, more and more youth in Yemen are facing mental health problems. The International Committee of the Red Cross says the widespread conflict, severe economic decline, food insecurity, and the collapse of essential public services continue to take an enormous toll on the population's mental and physical health. VOA's Mariama Diallo reports.
15-year-old Fadal Al-Ghatani is among many Yemeni youth who struggle with mental health issues. He's been living with nearly 500 children in a Sana orphanage since being separated from his parents.
I failed the mid-year exams in the fourth grade. I got all zeros because I was very sad as I was separated from my mom and dad. I could not study. When the teacher was explaining, I would leave the classroom and remember certain situations. I would cry and leave.
Living in the rural Yemeni city of Ibb with limited access to education, Al-Ghatani was forced to leave his hometown to receive a proper education in the capital.
When I traveled to Egypt and Tunisia, I used to see children play safely. They had nice clothes and they were somewhere safe. There was no shelling. Education was safe.
The five-year war in Yemen has killed thousands, pushed millions to the brink of famine, and caused the collapse of essential public services. The situation is taking a massive toll on the population's physical and mental health, according to the International Committee of the Red Cross. In the city of Aden, the sound of gunfire haunts Muwatta's Mosley every day. Even his guitar could not console him. At some point, he fell into depression.
The sound of gunfire and shelling. It is impossible for me to forget them. Extremely impossible. This is one of the things that scared us the most and led us into a bad psychological state.
The fear echoed by Haroon Mohammed.
The thing that caused me to withdraw and slip into depression the most was the sound of gunfire. It made us sad. I no longer like to talk or interact with people. It is all horror and fear after the war.
One in five people in war zones suffer from depression, anxiety, post-traumatic stress, bipolar disorder, or schizophrenia, the World Health Organization said earlier this year, with many suffering severe forms of these mental illnesses. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
In 1929, Edwin Hubble, astronomer and namesake of the famous space telescope, provided evidence that the universe was expanding. To determine the rate of expansion, Hubble came up with a unit of measurement called the Hubble constant. Initially, Hubble estimated the universe was expanding at a rate of 500 kilometers per second per megaparsec. A megaparsec is equal to about 3.26 million light years. Over the years, astronomers have lowered estimates of the Hubble constant down to between 50 and 100 kilometers per megaparsec. Astrophysicists from Clemson University recently used new techniques and data from the Fermi Gamma Ray Space Telescope and the Imaging Atmospheric Cherenkov Telescopes to determine the Hubble constant. They estimate the universe is expanding at a rate of nearly 67.5 kilometers per second per megaparsec. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Asthma can usually be controlled with an inhaler or sometimes with medication. When neither works, it might be that the patient does not have asthma at all. VOA's Carol Pearson reports that researchers have found another disease with the same symptoms as asthma actually starts in the stomach.
For more than a decade, Michelle Skeldon kept getting stronger and stronger medications for asthma as her breathing became more and more difficult.
Just to walk up maybe five steps, you know, was extremely hard for me, and it was hard to breathe. And at one point, I was actually on oxygen.
After a serious case of pneumonia, Skeldon's lung specialist sent her to see Dr. Jeffrey King, a gastroenterologist at National Jewish Health in Denver, Colorado.
What we try to do is take a step back and say, is there a root cause of those lung symptoms, and is it possible that this isn't asthma?
Tests showed Skeldon's stomach acid was flowing back into her esophagus, the tube that connects the mouth and the stomach. King says she did not have asthma.
It is very common for us to see people here at National Jewish who have come to us with a diagnosis of asthma, and once we put them through formal pulmonary testing, we actually find that they probably don't have asthma at all.
Some reflux is normal, but when the contents of the stomach travel up the esophagus and into the back of the throat, the liquid can flow into the airway and enter the lungs.
That can cause a slew of symptoms, including cough, hoarseness, shortness of breath, pneumonias.
What Skeldon had was gastroesophageal reflux disease, often called by its acronym GERD. Risk factors for GERD can include obesity or pregnancy, smoking, eating fatty or fried foods, and drinking coffee or alcohol can increase the symptoms. Losing weight or making other lifestyle changes can help. So can medication or even surgery, which Skeldon had, to prevent her stomach contents from reaching her lungs.
As soon as I had the surgery done, it was a totally different world. You know, the coughing stopped. It was amazing. It was like night and day.
Left untreated, GERD can lead to permanent lung damage or even esophageal cancer. King says GERD is something to be taken seriously.
If a patient is having more and more symptoms, is requiring more and more medications, or is not responding to those medications as well as they previously did, that should set off alarm bells that some other condition may be causing their symptoms.
Skeldon is relieved that her life is once again back to normal with no shortness of breath. Carol Pearson, VOA News.
Now let's take a look at some tech innovation for health.
Wearable devices no longer just count your steps. Companies have now developed wearables that can do much, much more. Greg Lelouch is president of Ergotech, a company that makes a headband that helps improve sleep.
Basically, your brain emits brain waves all the time, and some of those waves are clinically proven to be linked to your sleep quality.
Lelouch says the headband, along with a mobile app, train the brain to produce brain waves that help with sleep.
Here you have electrodes, and those are going to measure your brain activity.
A user would wear the headband and play a game for 20 minutes to try and kill jellyfish on their app. When the headband senses sleep-producing brainwaves, the game provides positive feedback with points, and the jellyfish disappear. Lelouch says a user will start getting better sleep after 15 sessions. The $500 device will be available in the United States in June. A smartwatch called Time C monitors the user's environment, such as temperature, humidity, sun exposure, noise, and pollution. The smartwatch app then offers personalized beauty creams based on the environment. Even babies get a wearable device. The Lumi by Pampers system includes a wearable device that sticks to a baby's diaper with Velcro. Lumi's Mandy Treby says the sensor monitors a baby's routine.
This wearable is tracking baby's sleep 24/7, as well as diapering. High motion is awake, low motion is asleep.
The sensor can also detect the strip on the diaper as it changes color when a diaper is wet. The device connects to an app or a camera and sends data to the cloud so parents and caregivers can get real-time information about the baby. Another segment of the population that can benefit from wearables is the elderly. For those who are worried about the health of aging parents, there's a wearable that can help predict potential health problems, says Satish Mova, CEO and founder of CarePredict.
It can track all of the gestures of the dominant arm. It knows when they're lifting a fork to the mouth or a chopstick to the mouth. It knows when they're drinking, when they're brushing teeth, when they're brushing hair, and it knows where they are in the home.
Mova says with machine learning and artificial intelligence, this wearable device learns its users' unique gestures and behaviors in 2 weeks.
Anytime there's a decline or a deviation in these activities and behaviors, it usually precedes a health issue. So, for example, somebody going into depression will stop taking a bath, will stop brushing their hair, will stay away from bright lights and sunlight, will stay in their own room, in their bedroom, darkened room.
When a behavior changes, the device will notify loved ones through a mobile app. Available in group homes since 2017, this $449 device is now available for individual home use. These are just a few of the many wearable devices that focus on health featured at this year's Consumer Electronics Show. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News,
and that's
Las
all
Vegas.
The time we have for this edition of Health Chat. For more on today's show, log on to our website at voanews.com/health. Also log on to facebook.com/VOA Health Chat. And let's keep the conversation going. I'm your host, Lynn Ormondo in Washington, with producer Dawn Brown. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.